and he just got up off the treatment bed and walked back to his room. And as he was walking back to his room, Roy was just shouting down the corridor, "You're a fucking prick. You've been all your life."
I've never heard so much rubbish in my life. Why do we have to listen to that garbage? It's just utter nonsense what he's talking about.
The only thing that they have got is the big boy up front, Sigurdsson, who really, Sig Thorsson. Oh, my word. Oh.
So where is his record?
Hang on.
Where has he achieved anything? 20 years ago?
Well, it would be a long time.
25 years ago? Why are we going for him, John?
I mean, what's he going to do with all his Irish jerseys now? Does he take them together and burn them? A collection of Irish jerseys. What does he do with them? And there he goes and puts on a white jersey.
And, of course, Celtic.
I agree with you.
Ronnie just wants to say the word Schweinsteiger.
Bastian Schweinsteiger.
The new season is back in full swing. Man United are in crisis. Newcastle are going to make the Champions League. And David Luiz has already reached peak David Luiz. So it's about time we launched the Balls.ie football show. My name is Mark Farley, and joining me this week and every week is Gary Connaughton and Sean Meehan. Lads, welcome along to the show.
And Mark, how are you?
Very excited. Are you excited?
Of course, I'm excited. New season, new Balls.ie football podcast, so everything is looking up already.
We'll be gracing your ears each Monday of the season, so be sure to subscribe by searching Balls.ie podcast in all good podcast apps. There you'll be able to enjoy all our content across the week, but if football is all you're into, you can also subscribe to our football-only feed by searching football on Balls.ie. Coming up on today's show, Sean will be taking us through his alternative player ratings from the Premier League weekend. Gary's going to be filling us in on how the Irish lads got on across the leagues, while we'll also be crowning our Scoundrel of the Week. And I'll be putting the lads to the test in the Balls.ie football show quiz. Let's get to it. Sean, every week on site, you've got a Premier League player ratings thing for the weekend. But it's a bit different to what you usually get. I saw no sevens or eights or whatever last week. Actually, the closest we got were 10 out of 10 toes. I think that was for Ceballos.
Yeah, it was for Danny. He has beautiful feet.
He does have lovely feet.
And he has
feet.
10 beautiful toes on those two beautiful feet.
His feet didn't do too much at the weekend, though.
Nope.
That game kind of passed him by. It was one of those. They were trying to get the ball, I think, from back to front. They were so deep, they were under so much pressure then that once it went up to the front two, it was like, right, let's turn and get Pepe to just cause absolute havoc. And there was no sort of intricate passing among the front three of Liverpool Arsenal.
Exactly, and you've got especially when you've got Pepe and Aubameyang up front, it's quite difficult for most to keep up with them. So never mind their midfield that's sort of camped in the final third of their own half and then trying to get up to those lads and they're already gone. You're not getting them. Unless it's Van Dijk, of course, who's just kind of like ease himself across each one of their runs. But Ceballos didn't do too much.
What was their player rating? You don't really go through all the players, I should say, for the listeners in each of these games. You just pick out something specific. Might be a player, might be a manager. Could be. It's just a talking point, really. What did you take from this game?
I went for Unai Emery's tactics, which was a complete shock to everybody, not least Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp. So the player rating was surely not no Shirley Bassey. Because he played a diamond. And Shirley Bassey famously said, "Diamonds are forever." Well, not in the case of Arsenal and Liverpool.
I see where you're going with this.
You know, so that's I kind of had a gripe with how he played. I thought that this match was going to be a kind of a free go for Arsenal. I think I was excited to see Pepe, Aubameyang and Lacazette, but instead we got a kind of Frankenstein's monster of trying to be conservative away from home and then having the two lads up front to just kind of leg it in behind. And didn't really work. Well, it worked.
I think it
somewhat.
Worked.
They lost 3-1 though.
They lost 3-1.
Well, I just don't know what else they were meant to do because looking at Liverpool's games, first few games of the season, the only weakness you could say they had, even though they weren't playing well, was their line was so high that a bit of pace caught them out in every game. And in Pepe and Aubameyang, Arsenal have probably the two of the quickest forwards in the league.
They're quite fast. Pepe, that was the first time for me seeing him this season, and he is
pretty
speedy.
Quick. Yeah. So
you give him that.
Putting them balls over top, and it did work. Like there was that run Pepe had in the first half where he probably should have scored. There was another time they could have scored as well. So I think if Arsenal went out and played 4-3-3 and it would look great, but probably won't end up getting hammered. Now, I know it finished 3-1 in the end anyway, but it could have been different if they did take the one or two chances they created.
So, that game kind of reminded me of, maybe not the last couple of years, but definitely say the Hyde Puke football, Gaelic football inter-county match, in that you had everybody left behind the ball, sitting deep, except for your two-man full forward line. And they had no support runners really coming. It was just up to them to do something. So there was that aspect. And then Pepe, you can imagine that was a GA match. There's just howls of, he's all left foot! He's all left foot! He's all left foot! Good lad, Virgil! On his left! On his left!
Yeah, I think like, people were always giving out about Arsenal before under Wenger that they'd go and they'd go to Liverpool and just say, play Liverpool the same as they'd play, I don't know, Watford at home. But at least with Emery this time, he tried to do something different. And you can't really have it all. At the end of the day, Liverpool are just way better than Arsenal, you know?
There's also, like, but he went up to St. James's Park first game of the season and basically did the exact same thing and eked out that 1-0. Like, you got to at least try something different against Liverpool. If you, like, so if you have it in your head that, oh, Liverpool are so much better than us, there's no chance of us doing, of us doing much here, then you've already lost.
Mm.
So I think you might as well try and at least go for it. Because what's going to happen? You either get beat 3-1, you get beat 5-0. Everybody's just going to go. Yeah. And Neville says after, like, he was trying not to be patronising by being extremely patronising.
Yeah.
And kept on saying, no, there's positives to take from Arsenal. It's like, there is, but nobody's seen Pepe, Lacazette and Aubameyang play up top yet this season. And I'm not quite sure when it's going to come. Like, does it come this weekend against Spurs? I doubt it.
I don't think Liverpool away is the right game to try it if they haven't done it at that stage already. But
whatever about Pepe, like, he has a habit of not playing Lacazette and Aubameyang together in the big games as well, and they lose the big games. So sometimes you gotta go, do you know what? Like, let's see what happens.
Like, maybe, like, that's what I always I think, like, playing Liverpool at Anfield is a free go for especially a team like Arsenal that don't really, like, they potentially are the fourth best team in the league this year. But nobody knows yet. Like, we have no notion of anything because it's only the third weekend. So, like, you might as well go, at least have it go off them. Like,
well, I think, in fairness, you can talk about Aubameyang and Lacazette not playing together. But the problem with Arsenal, as always, is that defence, which now has, of course, David Luiz thrown into the mix as well. And he had a big say on the outcome of the game as well on Saturday.
Yeah, let's actually have a listen to David Luiz's post-match interview explaining what happened in the penalty.
Yes, I think this you cannot take out from the players. It's just a reflex. When I turn, I see, I take and then take off the power. That's why I spoke with Momo. He said, I didn't feel you touch me. So that's why I didn't went down to the floor. But now we take the VAR, the VAR, you see, you cannot see the power. So it's difficult for the referees. And he see the shirt like that. I don't know. It's difficult for them also. I cannot complain with the referees because it's also difficult for them. If you play with a large, extra large shirt now, you take your things, it could be penalty every time. So it's interpretation. So I think if you pull someone with the power and you change his strength to go to the ball, is different. So it was just a reflex. That's it. He made the penalty, and after that, he gave me the yellow. So in the third goal, I could not make a foul and put my team in trouble with the 10 men. So I think conditioning a bit my game after that was more difficult. But like I said,
there's so much to take from that interview. First of all, I enjoy how he calls Mo Salah Momo.
Mm.
Didn't know they were on Momo terms.
Chelsea teammates.
They have a rapport.
They have a rapport, him and Momo. But Dada or Dava, Dab Dab, I don't know what is.
Lulu?
Lulu. Yeah, Lulu is quite apt. I also like who calls referees heferies. when they have a child, then do they become cowaries? Or what's the story?
That joke's going to go over a lot of people's heads.
But what is he talking about here? Like, pulling someone's jersey is pulling someone's jersey. Like, oh, it was just a reflex and I took off the power, which I think means he didn't actually pull him back. And also that Momo said that he didn't feel him. Then why did Momo put his arms out? As in, like, what the hell's going on here?
Come to a complete stop as well. Is what to be said. I'm getting held back here.
I think Momo was just being nice to Louise. I think he was just trying to say, ah, yeah, you didn't really do anything wrong there. Yeah, I didn't feel it.
Do it again next time. Yeah. Sure, you're probably
like, or maybe he was like, you know, if I was in your position, I'd do the same. Well, that's why Mo Salah is an attacker and David Luiz is some form of defender. He's definitely a footballer, whether he's a defender or not. It's been up in the air ever since he came to England.
I love him though. He's such, he's box office. You need to, like, you can't, that stuff, if you're a neutral watching that game, or indeed a Liverpool fan, you're just like, oh yeah, bring us more Dave Luiz. I mean, even the fact that he gave out about the penalty. I don't know if he gave out, first of all, blaming VAR. It's like, everybody could see that. It was like, there's the penalty. You don't need VAR for it. And then complaining that the penalty meant that he couldn't hack Salah for
which
the third
is,
goal.
Which is brilliant. And I don't hear enough of it. It was like, well, the referee's out there. He's out there, you know, tapering the game. Like, if Salah's running through past me and I've not got a yellow, he's going into the stands.
The thing about that is as well, Salah got the ball 50 yards from goal with Luiz standing behind him with his back to goal, and Luiz got completely turned. It's like, maybe if you concentrate on not getting skint by
another
Mo Salah.
Example of how this was actually a Gaelic football match. It's like, you know, look, at I could have taken the black card, could have hauled him down, but no, it was already
there's
the
been
yellow.
This like effort from Arsenal after the game, all parts of the club, to be like, try and come out and like aim at this incident specifically and say, no, that definitely wasn't a penalty. And I don't know what you want, because I think, I suppose, there's still this thing in football that if a player doesn't fall down, then it's not a penalty. Like, if Mo Salah got roasted a few times last year for a similar situation where his jersey was pulled and he went down, people saying it's not a penalty. Yeah. He's saying that he dived, and now he stays on his feet, and people are saying, oh, it's not a penalty, sure he didn't even fall. So I don't know.
Like, you've got a case of, like, there is a time, and you can pull jerseys, that's a given, but there is a time when you do a little tug, you can do a little tug, and it's like subtle enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe a ref doesn't see it, maybe the assistant doesn't.
Or just a hand somewhere to slow them down. Like, exactly. Martin Kelly got away with it against United at the weekend with Andy Martial. I don't know how he managed to. Like, that was, I think I would look back at it, it may have been just outside the box for free, but it was a foul. Yeah, it was definitely a foul either way.
Like, I think that's maybe what Luiz is saying, that like, oh, Salah, like, he didn't feel as though he was like, you know, going too far away from me. So I was just holding on to his jersey, which has a stretchy material. So he wasn't even that far. Like,
damn that modern jersey technology.
Curse you, New Balance.
Yeah, the wearing extra large jerseys, it's going to be a penalty every day. What? No, you can wear as big a jersey as you want. You're not supposed to pull it.
Exactly, exactly. Actually, on jerseys, there's another reason why Arsenal didn't win, was that, what were they doing wearing their third kit?
Yep.
Yeah, fair.
Sean, you came on our the Build Up podcast that comes out every Wednesday, where we preview the sporting weekend, and you were really excited about the prospect of the bruised banana.
Absolutely.
On Saturday. And we got no bruised banana.
It was a throwback to 1989.
We got a very gone off banana.
Yeah, completely.
Yep.
Still with touches of yellow. Yeah. Or was it more like neon green?
It was like an aubergine,
something?
Really, rather than a banana.
It was a strange one. It was
an eggplant, they might call it in America,
the States. I was very disappointed, to be honest. When we turned it on and I saw that, one, Unai Emery hadn't been listening to me to not play the 4-3
again.
Typical. And then,
I like the diamond.
Sorry. Good evening.
Good evening. And then,
I love how he only speaks in two words. His sentences are always only two words long. It's like, we like to play the football.
Your Unai Emery sounds an awful lot like Pope John Paul II.
Let's nip that one in the bud.
Well, look it.
But yeah, the jersey. It's the third kit has gone too far, in my opinion. It's a scourge in football now, all these kits, and they don't wear the away one when they're meant to wear the away one, they wear the third one, and then sometimes when they could wear the home one, they wear the away one, and it's just...
They're just liable to show up in anything these days.
Yeah, which I don't agree with. At all. I'm a purist in certain forms of football, and that's definitely one of them. If you can wear your home kit away from home, wear your home kit. Yeah,
the Chelsea and Norwich game was another one. Chelsea were wearing a white kit at Norwich, which was reasonably close to Norwich's yellow kit when they could have easily wore the blue kit.
And then all of a sudden, this isn't an issue. Yeah. I don't.
You got to think about those short sales. Gary, true. Before we move off this game, just looking at it in terms of fantasy football, I've wildcarded this week.
Yeah.
Just to let you all know, I've in crisis time already. And I'm only, like, Newcastle averted a crisis at the weekend. Everybody was saying they are goosed. They turned things around. I don't have that luxury, I'm afraid. I'm still firmly in crisis mode. I'm looking at that game, I'm thinking Pepe. And I'm thinking that Liverpool defence. A lot of people have doubled up on Liverpool defenders.
Yeah, I have.
Trent Alexander-Arnold is always a good option because he takes corners and that paid off the weekend. But they're conceding goals. And if you're going to have a Liverpool defender in there just to cover, Matip is only 5.4 million.
Mm.
Like, he is a nice differential in there rather than spending all your money on really expensive defenders.
Yeah, the thing about Matip is it seems Klopp is always looking for the first chance to get Joe Gomez back in the team. But judging by the first couple of games of the season, Joe Gomez is way off where Liverpool need him to be. So, and Matip has been great. He's scored 2 goals already as well, which is very unlike him. But I can't see any way Matip isn't going to be first choice for the foreseeable future the way he's playing at the moment.
Anything else catch your eye fantasy wise in that game?
Mo Salah's just buying money in the bank, isn't he?
Well, that's the thing. Everybody last week at some stage, this thing started going around and everybody just decided that Mane was going to be better value than Salah and that he was going to do more than Salah this year. And it was just sort of taken as given just because, I don't know what it was. It was like a virus that just spread around the place. And then Salah just gave the two fingers to everyone and was like, nope.
Don't listen to the hype, Mark. Mo Salah is your A1 fantasy player. Yep. If you can get him in your team, get him in your team, because he just brings points every week. And Mane could end up scoring roughly the same amount of goals. He could, but Salah will definitely score 20 plus goals this season in the Premier League.
And taking penalties. Yep. Moving on, Sean, what have we got next? Man United against Crystal Palace was probably the other standout result of the weekend for all the wrong reasons, as usual for United fans.
Completely. So I went for possibly my favourite tweet of the weekend from the lad who scored the winner, Patrick Van Aanholt.
Wasn't really from him, because it was sent within about 10 seconds of the game finishing as well. I presume it was his social media team.
Whoever that team are, they are also doing bits. It's PVA and co doing bits. So it's hashtag PVA doing bits. Also, I never actually realised that his initials were PVA. And if he was actually a really good marker,
he'd stick to you like glue.
PVA glue right there.
Oh yes, I like it. Art, he'd be Neil Buchanan would love him. He'd be a real big hit on Art Attack, making paper mat. Here's a Patrick Van Aanholt I prepared earlier.
It's like any time I watched it back in the day, and I never knew what PVA glue was. Yeah, all I had was Pritt stick. That's all I had.
It's like papier-mâché. Can something just please not be papier-mâché for
once? I've never watched Art Attack. This whole conversation is going, I'm not getting any of it. But Patrick Van Aanholt, yeah, he scored the winner. It was
United are crumbling like a piece of papier-mâché left out in the rain overnight, Sean. What was your take of this game?
I wasn't surprised. Well, I was surprised at a few things, that Crystal Palace didn't lose and that Luka Milivojevic didn't score. But of course, that was my own personal take on what I thought might happen at the weekend.
Yeah, that was your big shout on the build-up. You said that Zaha was going to run at United. He was going to get fouled. Crystal Palace are going to get a penalty. They're going to score that penalty, but they were going to lose. Literally, I think the exact opposite of everything you said happened.
It was a very
Man United got a penalty. They missed the penalty and Crystal Palace won.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed, I don't like to take pleasure in other people's misfortune, but like when Rashford missed it and then everybody is trying to like double down on like, oh, not going mad over the penalty miss, I was like, have a bit of consistency, please. Like if you're going to go mad over Pogba wanting to take a penalty that he was fouled for and then he subsequently misses it and then Rashford takes a penalty, doesn't score it, Pogba at least got his on target.
I love that stuff over the weekend. It was like, at least Rashford hit his with conviction. He made good contact with the ball, I suppose, but so did Pogba. And if Rui Patricio dived the wrong way last Monday night, then there's no conversation. Whereas like, Rashford's missed. His was off target.
It's like, if you look at the Wolves and Burnley match, which we're not going to talk about, but Raul Jimenez scoring in the last second with a coolly dispatched spot kick, it must be said, sending Nick Pope the wrong way. If Pope dives the right way, that's an awful penalty because it doesn't go in the corner. It's like halfway between the middle and the corner. But it's a good penalty because he scored it.
Yeah,
there's no bad penalty that goes in.
Exactly. But United did lose 2-1.
Rashford, to be fair to him, was very unlucky. That was like it hit the inside of the post. It wasn't even that it hit it full on. It came back across the face of goals. Like he was very close to it being a perfect penalty.
Yeah, but
But he was obviously missed.
Close isn't good enough.
Them's the breaks, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Gary, what was your take on this game?
Man United are just... I don't even know. At this stage, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer just looks like a work experience kid that was thrown on the sideline and is like, right, someone is sick today. You just need to go out and keep hold of fort because... I don't know what he's like so out of his depth, and he feels sorry for him in a way because like he's got his dream job there at United and he's given it his best go, but like it's becoming increasingly obvious that, and again, I don't think it's his fault. I think he's more a symptom of the problem than the cause of the problem itself, but I don't see how he's going to be a success. He's not going to be the man to turn around things at Man United.
What about Septuagint? Is it Septuagint? It is Septuagint. Man in his 70s 71-year-old Roy Hodgson. Like you talk about we're going to hop in Newcastle obviously, but like Crystal Palace were already been written off after the first two games of the season as well, and he's doing it again. You can't fault a man's record. He gets kind of, I think his opinion has forever been reputation has been dinted by his time at Liverpool and England, but He just gets the job done.
Like, the thing about Hodgson is that he thrives in those kind of environments. Like, after Liverpool, people were like, well, this lad quite clearly doesn't know what he's doing. Went to West Brom and, you know, managed to solidify them until he got the England job.
Yeah.
And I think he was blessed that Palace backed him this summer to be like, no, we're not selling Zaha unless it's for a ludicrous amount of money. Because that's a kind of... star power that a team like that needs in order to survive or be relatively comfortable in the Premier League. But even like, was it Jeffrey Schlupp that won the header for Jordan Ayew's goal?
Yeah.
One, it was a Victor Lindelof that missed that header.
He was.
That's unforgivable because I don't know how tall Jeffrey Schlupp is, but he's not as tall
Please
as Victor
Lindelof. Please call him by his proper title. Jeffrey.
Excuse me. Well... shouldn't be winning that header.
No.
Lindelof should absolutely be winning that. Like, and then Ayew coming off the wing, and Maguire is not catching most players. Never mind.
Ayew,
a lad like Ayew, and but
that
I
was
think
a coolly dispatched goal.
It was.
Can you dispatch a goal in open play, or does it have to be a penalty?
If it's a one-on-one, it can be coolly dispatched.
Absolutely, because it's almost the same sort of field as a penal, you know.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between a coolly dispatched one-on-one and a makes-no-mistake one-on-one?
Yeah, because I think you can make no mistake and bury it, but you can't coolly dispatch a rat.
Yeah, like you're hitting it with the laces.
Yeah, that's not cool.
It's not cool.
But he made no mistake with it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good point. Sorry. He assuredly
finished.
Yeah.
The first goal didn't really satisfy my need for my David De Gea agenda, but I I put that in my alternative player ratings that it wasn't really PVA doing bits so much as David De Gea's near post misfortune.
What's your David De Gea agenda?
He doesn't know about angles.
He skipped trigonometry class.
Big time. Foundation maths level angles. Like, he doesn't know. So if he's on his near post, I'm confident on few things in professional football. If I was ever in a position to come one-on-one or like, you know, have a chance to take a shot on goal against David De Gea, I'm sticking it near post every single time. He's not saving it. And it happened again. Like, he's at his near post. He knows what's going to happen here. Van Aanholt has a very small window to stick it in past that way. But instead, De Gea leaves a little bit of a gap to his right. Enough so that Van Aanholt's going to smash this. He always does. Like, he's a left back that loves a goal. He loves a ging, a blem, as Brian Kerr might call it. And De Gea lets it squeeze under his body.
If it's not feet height, David De Gea has a much smaller chance of saving it because he just throws his legs at everything.
But here's the thing, like, that was sort of leg level.
Yeah, but he didn't understand the angle.
Exactly.
Pythagoras' theorem is alien to him.
It's shook right now. It really is.
I think David De Gea has had a remarkable dip in form over the last 18 months to the point where he was considered by far the best goalkeeper in the world, to now being well below the top tier in the Premier League,
there's the sort of elite class of Ederson, Alisson, and then maybe you could put Kepa in there, although I think he's just kind of a step below, alongside like Bernd Leno,
Lloris.
Yeah, well, I think even Lloris has gone down to a spot where De Gea is. I think him and De Gea are pretty much, they're not too dissimilar, and then that's on a level that probably like Nick Pope is on, you know.
And then Artur Boric is obviously at God level. He's above the Pope.
But I totally,
he is the holy goalie.
Yeah. I don't want to put too much like heat on David De Gea by comparing him to this, but there's also almost a little bit, it's getting to the point where I was with Joe Hart when he was at Man City, where he continues to make these so-called uncharacteristic mistakes.
So you say that
at a frightening frequency.
Like, Joe Hart was never at the level of David Ayer.
No, but in terms of every time he makes these mistakes, people are saying, oh, it's not like him. Well, it's becoming like him.
But that's my agenda that I've harboured on David Ayer for the guts of about 6 years. And now it's fully coming to fruition.
We should get a maths teacher or someone in here for the podcast soon enough and just talk us through some of these angles that he's been missing out on. Just like, you know, the other way you get the referee in to discuss the referee decisions is be like, on BT, we're now joined by Graham Paul
wasn't a maths teacher. Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were talking about referees.
No, I'm thinking of doing it as well.
Okay. I was trying to think of Pat Dunne.
I was trying to think of the name of Matt Damon's character in Good Will Hunting.
Will. There's not many famous maths teachers,
yeah,
is there?
We're now joined by Will.
The Beast. The Beast from The Chase. He's a maths teacher, wasn't he?
Was he?
I think so.
Beast, what should you have done here? Well, as you can see, if you divide the right hypotenuse by the... anyway, moving on.
Mark, what do you think of Daniel James? You, as who came oh so close in January to having playing for your beloved Leeds United, what have you made of his start to the Premier League?
It's just, I can't... I was watching the Leeds United documentary and it just makes you cry. He was ready, he was signed for Leeds, the whole thing was nearly done, and to just see him there doing Kylian Mbappe goal celebrations,
oh yeah,
in Old Trafford.
I'm going to play football tonight. If I score a goal, I might do an Mbappe. It doesn't mean it means anything.
Yeah. Thanks, Sean.
I'm just saying.
It just hurts me inside. We don't need him anymore.
The thing about that Van Aanholt winner is I think it saved the football in public and possibly Man United fans from themselves in billing Daniel James as the next great footballer a la they done with Anthony
Jesse
Marsh.
Lingard.
Well,
just
not
Jesse
so much.
They did it with Lingard. I remember. I was there.
To a lesser
extent. I've got the scars to prove it.
To a lesser extent, but to Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial levels, who like I'm not saying Anthony Martial and Marcus Rashford are bad footballers, because they're not. But the way they were being discussed after playing 5 games for Man United and scoring a couple of goals was, well, these guys are going to win the Ballon d'Or in the next 3 years. So I think we've been saved by Patrick Van Aanholt of all that Daniel James hype.
He's doing bits. Fair play to him.
Moving on, Sean. What else have you got from the weekend?
So, another shock was Steve Bruce's plucky Newcastle United defeating Spurs at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, because it still hasn't got a name. Has it got a new White Hart Lane? It's not. They're not calling it White Hart Lane anymore. I think it's like...
I actually said this to Mick after our Build Up podcast last week, that we really need to go out as a company and Google what Tottenham's stadium is called, if it does have a name, because this discussion's happened on three podcasts in a row now, where we've gone, does it even have a name yet? And we've called it a different name each time.
But that just kind of lends itself
to...
The North London Stadium. The complete lack of information that Spurs have given out. They're like, oh, here's this new stadium. What's it called?
I've never heard it called anything apart from the new White Hart Lane. Is that not what it's called?
No. Apparently, they're not going with White Hart Lane. Anyway.
Why wouldn't they?
It makes sense. It's not like they've built it 5 miles down the road.
It's across the road.
Exactly. It's on the same block. Like, either way, Spurs lost 1-0 to Newcastle thanks to a goal to Joe Linton.
Big Joey, as Steve Bruce called him.
Oh, it's called the Northumberland Development Stadium. Sorry.
That might be the worst name.
That's the one name I haven't heard it called.
It's actually called Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, but it was the Northumberland Development before it was built.
It's like Arsenal never had this problem because they had the sponsorship settled years previous. But I can't remember what that was called either. And I remember looking it up purposefully when I went there and now can completely forget. But anyway, at the new Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Joey Linton. I didn't realise that until yesterday that it's not. Well, first of all, I thought his name was Franklinton, just because, you know, when you forget a player's name in your command whatever his name is. So I think I'm just going to keep calling him
the
Frank
only,
from
the
now
only
on.
Brazilian man ever called Frank.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's of that ilk of like Fred and Joe and Bernard and all the lads. Yeah.
Bernard.
I know it's Bernard, but for the purposes of this, it's Bernard.
Exactly. But I thought, right, well, it's Joe Linton. But no, it's Joey Linton. Mm. Joey, I can't even do it.
Joey
Linton.
There's a bit of nuance.
Sounds like a lad from
name.
Down the road there, Joey Linton.
I know at Joey Linton's house there. I'm trying to get a bit of cement.
cement.
So for that match, again, I have an issue. I've got a lot of issues. Mauricio Pochettino is doing my head in. He's doing my nut in. And he's doing the nuts of most Irish football fans in by just teasing us.
Yeah, that's the worst.
It's not even like... They lead you on, is what they do, these football managers. They lead you on to the point of, he's got to be in the match squad. He's got to be in the match squad. Troy Parrott. Like he didn't play for the under 23s and they lost to Derby, you know,
after beating Man City the week before.
Man
with
City
Parrott,
and Liverpool
with Parrott
in the previous 2 weeks, then they lose to Derby County because their talisman is gone.
Mm.
He's been training with the first team in the week. We saw it on Sky Sports. Then little Keno, big up little Keno, is sitting in Harry Kane's spot. He was right beside him, Troy Parrott.
Jersey hanging on the wall on Robbie Keane's Instagram. Sorry for those of you who didn't see it.
The match squad comes out.
He also arrived... No, hold on, you forgot the bit where it showed him on the Spurs Twitter account arriving with the first team squad to White Hart Lane with his little bag of hair gel and toothpaste.
Oh, his bag.
Yeah, it's whatever they put in.
Was it a Louis V bag or was it just a Nike?
It was small and black, so it's inconclusive, but...
Okay, we'll need to find that out. We'll get on that right away. But just wasn't in the match squad.
I was here in the office all day waiting for this Troy Parrott news to break, and like he probably wasn't going to play anyway, unless he definitely wouldn't have played the way the game worked out. But then to just not have him in the squad was actually heartbreaking.
Also, Harry Kane didn't come with an ass's roar of a goal, apart from the fact that they should have had a penalty. But
it wasn't a penalty.
I'm going to err on the side of not a penalty.
I don't know.
You're the Robbie Keane in this studio, too, to Graham Souness and Julian Lescott.
It was kind of like, it was harsh because he kind of just fell over in front of him, but them's the breaks. That's a penalty.
No, because what happened was he fell and Harry Kane was like, oh, hold on. And then went to go across, completely unnaturally went to go across his body to initiate contact and it wasn't a penalty.
People always naturally go across bodies these days. but anyway, yeah, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just pissed off with Kane because of fantasy again.
I had him as my fantasy captain this week. And I think there needs to be a discussion about Harry Kane. Because when was the last time Harry Kane... I know he scored 2 goals against Villa after being putrid for 75 minutes of that game. But when's the last time Harry Kane played well?
I think he's now got into the mindset that certain English strikers do, whereby they're a great number nine. Why are you trying to stop being a number nine to come short and try to be a number 10 when you're not that? Score your goals. Whereas he tries to do too much where he's not like particularly the best footballer to do it. He can pick out a pass, fair play to him, and he can link up play quite well and he can dribble quite well. But his best quality is being in the box and scoring goals. Yeah. And I know you have to get the ball into the box in order for you to score goals. But I think what he tries to do is too much, and then when he tries to do too much, he then ends up doing not a lot, like, because he's either coming short and he's not in the position that Spurs are looking for him in, and then every attack breaks down and then they're on the back foot again.
When Christian Eriksen isn't in the team, he looks a completely different player, and when Eriksen did come on, there was a bit of an uptick in what he was playing, but that's very worrying for Spurs, considering there's what, maybe a 50% chance that Christian Eriksen isn't going to be there in a couple of weeks.
Exactly.
Time. So
Sergio Aguero, possibly to his detriment in terms of the reputation he'll have, the legacy he'll leave, has always stayed as that number nine. Who? What does he do in that Man City team? He scores goals. He's kind of been just not written off, but I think people have gotten on the Sterling bandwagon. They're talking about this the season that Gabriel Jesus gets more game time, becomes Man City's number one striker. What does Sergio do? Turns out and scores two more goals at the weekend.
To be fair to Aguero, he has adapted a bit. When Pep came in first, you could clearly tell that Pep didn't fancy him. And even though he was obviously an incredible goal scorer, but he has upped his work rate and fit into the Pep Guardiola thing. But yeah, I get what you're saying. People
on the ball or in attacking ways.
He does like to come out of the box a bit, but he's never dropping way short. And to be honest, you would trust the midfield that you have if you're playing for Man City. But he trusts his midfielders to be able to get the ball up to him. Yeah. And then to be able to support him then if he has to hold the ball up or whatever.
When Sergio Aguero comes out of the box, it's only so he can find more space when he goes back into the
exactly,
box.
Exactly. Or if he's picking a ball up and say De Bruyne has moved out onto the wing, he'll pick it up, spin, give it to the winger and go. And that's just a testament to how smart the man is. But not to say that Harry Kane isn't smart. Like, he is a proven goal scorer at Premier League level,
but he's no Sergio Aguero.
There's
definitely, like we've had a million times before, about English players being overhyped. And to be fair to Harry Kane, he's probably done a lot more than most to deserve the hype he's got. But there was talk of after the World Cup last summer of Harry Kane's now the best striker in world football because he scored three penalties and a couple of goals against Panama. I'm not saying he's bad, but he's in bad form, and he doesn't have the impact on the game that most of these top level footballers of like Salah, even Sterling, Aguero, the other, like obviously the very best, Messi's or Ronaldo's, he doesn't do it, and he's nowhere near their level until he can do that. And I think he will.
He might be the kind of personification of the kind of lurch that Spurs find themselves in, especially if Eriksen goes, because you bring in Ndombele, and he wasn't really anything more than a replacement for Moussa Dembele, who left and they didn't replace immediately. Lo Celso just seems to be another conduit. It's not really someone that can change a game. The players that they were linked with were either going to be replacements for Eriksen or have a tiny bit more to their game so that they can, you know, bring Spurs to the next level. Like, the next level for Spurs is winning a trophy akin to a Premier League or a Champions League. It's not just now getting an FA Cup or a League Cup and that'll appease fans because they haven't won anything in 11 years. It's about actually winning a big trophy, or at least consistently being up the top of the league or being in Champions League semi-finals and finals. Like, Lo Celso, at least on the evidence of that, isn't good enough or might not be for quite some time. And it'll only get worse if Eriksen's gone. And I think Kane just kind of proves that in one player.
So what was your rating for this game, Sean?
It was to do with Mauricio Pochettino. Comeuppance.
Comeuppance, the official rating from... I don't know how you describe them. Can't really describe them player ratings. They're the balls rating. The
verdicts.
The verdict, that's it.
Exactly. Like, they're not left of field so much as that they have nothing to do with the match. But they pretty much have nothing to do with the match.
Speaking of matches, go through the rest of them. What are the rest of your verdicts?
Okay, so Norwich versus Chelsea. We gone for Fat Tony.
Explain yourself.
Tim Krul was playing in goal, and now, not to say that he played poorly, but Chelsea's winner didn't cover himself in glory. So I asked myself, where is the Ralph Farman? When are you going to get the Ralph Farman? And so on.
And so forth.
So hence Fat Tony. For Bournemouth and Manchester City, we're going with reduce, reuse, recycle.
Okay.
Because I christened Harry Wilson the king of the gang. He loves a blem.
He does.
So I was just imagining what it would be like if, you know, when you're walking down the road and you see like an empty Coke can, you're just like knocking it along, like where he like lines himself up for like a 30 yard scorcher with an empty Coke can going down the road. Reduce, reuse, recycle, everybody.
A nice message as well, especially on such a charged week for climate change debate.
Yeah,
exactly.
Doing our bit.
We don't like Jair Bolsonaro, but we like Harry Wilson. For Wolves and Burnley, we've gone with head and shoulders. I was wondering whether Eric Peters will get the hairdryer treatment off Sean Dyche, considering Sean Dyche doesn't really have hair. Like, so I went with head and shoulders because no dandruff. For Villa and Everton, this is to do with Wesley.
Not our Wesley, a different Wesley.
A different Wesley, Wesley Suarez. Even though Wes Hoolahan's confirmation name was Cantona, which is a nice little continental flair. I went with get Richard Dyche Ryan for Wesley, because he finished well for his first goal for Villa, but it was the second goal that really caught my attention, because he took the ball in, end of the match, two centre-halves on him, and to quote the great 50 Cent, he was patiently waiting. But rather than he was patiently waiting for a track to explode on, he was patiently waiting for a John McGinn to pass to.
Yep.
And then he fed it to Anwar El Ghazi, 2-0. There we go.
John McGinn, possibly the greatest player in the world right now. If you listen to any Aston Villa fans anyway.
According to our own Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, exactly. But Gary, I've turned to you again, yeah. Mr. Fancy Football Man. There are a lot of candidates coming off the back of this weekend in terms of strikers that you need, that you can buy, that are cheapish. Mm. Right? Wesley's an option now. I think he's 6 million. I think Joey Linton is 5.9. You've got Haller at, he's more expensive, 7. I think he's 7.4 million now. At West Ham. You've got Ashley Barnes, who I think, is it Aguero and Mane or Aguero and Salah are the only players to have scored more goals than Ashley Barnes in the Premier League calendar year.
It may be. Well, three, actually, possibly. I'm not sure. Could be Sterling
and Mane.
Because Barnes was winning that after like the first weekend of the season. And then I think it's down to probably Aguero is now just shading it.
I think that's the hardest thing in fantasy football, is to get value out of that third striker, because a lot of the time you're going to be down to, like you said, 5.5, 6 million. Some people spend even less. But I have Danny Ings, which...
It's another option, but it keeps getting points. You'd say it. You're like, oh, Danny Ings. Wesley and Joey Linton just sound, and Haller just all look and sound a lot more exciting. But Danny Ings is doing bits.
Haller, I'm wary of any West Ham striker in general, just because West Ham can't seem to sign a striker, so I tend to avoid them. But Joey Linton, I don't know, like, what did he score? 6 goals last season or something like that for Hoffenheim? So he's not prolific.
Yeah. Same, and Wesley isn't exactly known as a goal scorer.
But there is some good options.
We had a debate over like what Brighton striker to choose, and... So my player rating is to do with Florin Andone, who...
Go on. This is the Brighton-Southampton.
Brighton-Southampton, yeah. Who got himself sent off for a rash challenge on Jan Valery. So here's another thing I didn't realise. Now, this has got nothing to do with Neil Mopay, Florin Andone particularly, or their other striker.
Old man Murray.
It's about Jurgen Lacadia. Do you know that Jurgen Lacadia is an EDM producer?
No.
There we go. So my player rating is EDM.
So Mick was in the office, our own editor, Mick McCarthy, and we were talking about fantasy football, and he's like, I fancy Brighton this weekend. I'm going to get in a Brighton striker. Who do I get in? And we were kind of debating. It's like, well, Glenn Murray is always there. Mopay scored a load of goals, but he's not starting. And then Mick decided for some reason to go for Andone.
I didn't realise this is brilliant.
I got a message on our Slack channel then, just be like, Andone. That's all it said. The message said. And I think that sums up a lot of people's luck in fantasy. So whatever, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
I'm giving away everything here for anyone who's in our FS leagues. I mentioned everyone, I'm pretty much buying on my wild card. But Montoya is a defender playing as left wing back, and was actually up, I think he had two chances on Saturday. One very good chance to score in the opposition penalty area. So if you are looking for cheap, I think he's 4.4 or 4.5, cheap defenders who attack. Lewis Dunk obviously scored a goal but was disallowed.
Yeah, I have him. I know.
Yeah, so there are a few there at Brighton. The other, what's called the other defender again? Not obviously Shane Duffy.
Dan Byrne, yeah.
He was completely asleep for Redmond there. I don't know what was going on towards the end.
Yeah, there was it? They signed Matt Clark from Portsmouth, and then they immediately shipped him out on loan to Derby, and now he's not going to play for Derby. So they might as well just bring him back.
Yeah. White's on loan at Leeds, and he's the best centre back in the division. He's literally an upgrade on Pontus Janssen.
Of course, a completely unbiased Leeds opinion there from our own Mark Farrelly. It wouldn't be
three
like
three games,
him.
Four games into the season.
Are you getting t-shirts made up already?
No. If anything, if Leeds, Leeds, I'm long enough a Leeds United fan at this point to know that the hope is what kills you.
So for Watford and West Ham, I chose Javi Gracia as my man to give a player rating to.
Yeah.
Because the Pozzo family that own Watford are, you know, the quickest gunslingers just outside of London.
They're like, if someone was going to play them in a film, it'd be Clint Eastwood.
Oh, completely, completely. Just with a smoking revolver.
Yep.
Constantly at Vicarage Road, just always there. So
it's called Smith and Wesson Stadium, isn't it? Sorry, we got on. Go on, get your player in.
So I just went with yeehaw.
I didn't notice any possible candidates for our Scoundrel of the Week in Watford, West Ham. But we have a few nominations. We've got David Luiz, undoubtedly, for his... I don't know whether it was his foul or his post-match interview.
I think it's kind of a perfect storm of everything.
Exactly. I was also looking at a keen eye on Seamus Coleman on Friday night, booting the ball at... was it Wesley he booted at?
Yeah, I think so.
He got stuck into him with a free kick where he started getting away. Apparently, Everton players are doing that all evening. I don't know who should get the nomination, though. Is it Seamus Coleman or is it Wesley for getting in the way? Who's the scoundrel?
I think Coleman is your man there.
Certainly, I would go with Coleman anyway.
I'd like to throw Roberto Firmino's hat into the ring as well for his wonderfully cheeky chip flick over the head of Danny Ceballos, which he then tried to volley into the net from 25 yards, which I thought was very scoundrel-like.
And as the domestic football buff, I feel it's only fair that I bring in the League of Ireland to this. Neil Fenn has just taken over as Cork City manager, having abruptly left Longford Town, pretty much akin to what he did at the tail end of his playing career for Dundalk when he said he retired, when really he just wanted to sign for Rovers.
My last nomination is the lad with the lawnmower who was going around doing his job, to be fair, in Anfield on Saturday evening. And Jamie Carragher was getting really annoyed at him because he kept bringing the lawnmower just behind the presenting table. And poor Kelly Gates had to be like, it's not his fault, Jamie. Sorry, it was Trezeguet, by the way, who got in the way of Coleman, I just remembered. But that then leaves us with a decision to make. Is it David Luiz? Is it Trezeguet? Is it Coleman? Is it Neil Fenn? Is it Roberto Firmino? Or is it the lawnmower lad? Who are we going to give our inaugural Scoundrel of the Week to?
I think we keep it in-house. I think we go Seamus Coleman. I liked it. I liked the way he just went through him. It was very Irish-like, you know, just no messing. It's like, sick of this. Go on. I'm going to straight through
him. Yeah, I'm not angry at Coleman. I've no conviction one way or the other, to be honest. I love David Luiz and his just it's a foul. I don't understand.
We're not going to get into it again.
I just don't understand.
I kind of want to go for David Luiz. I'm voting David Luiz, so you have to make the final call.
I'm going to go with David Luiz.
That's fair. I have no problem with David Luiz.
David Luiz is our first ever Scoundrel of the Week. If you spot any scoundrels at the weekend, be sure to tweet us at @BallsDOTIE and we could feature you on the show next week. We need all the Scoundrel of the Week nominations we can get.
And David Luiz, if you're listening to this, send us in your address and we'll post out the award to you.
But now, Gary, let's talk with the Irish players in action at the weekend. Gary, you've been surveying. I'm wary that the fact that all we mentioned really that roundup from Sean about the player ratings and the verdicts in the matches. The only Irish player that really got a mention was Troy Parrott. And he didn't even play.
Mm.
Tell me somebody played this weekend.
A good few played. It wasn't.
That's all we got to say about
it
that.
Wasn't the most. It wasn't the most successful of weekend for the Irish lads over in England. The highlight. There's a couple. Sean Maguire had a stormer playing for Preston. They won at the weekend. He won two penalties, both of which he did well to win. It was kind of his pace and his trickery that kind of gotten by guys, and he was hacked down. So that's encouraging to see. And then the other one is, although the result went very badly against him, as you well know, Mark, Nathan Collins playing for Stoke and captaining Stoke at 18 years of age, which is a very good sign. Centre half, I suppose, is a position that we're fairly doing okay in. But to have another one coming through so young and playing at that level and being considered an important player is encouraging.
Exactly. James McLean also was playing in that game. And he went viral at the weekend, but sadly it was because he was the person chasing Stuart Dallas as Dallas latched on to the greatest pass in the history of the game, really, from Pablo Hernandez until his pass then for the third goal that Patrick Bamford scored from. But Ireland's Patrick Bamford, of course. Sorry.
What's the thing about Stoke and Collins? Like, every time he starts, he's captain.
Yeah, and then he doesn't get playing. He didn't get playing for the two championship games before that. He played in the League Cup, captained them. He played the first game of the season, played League Cup. He
scored in the League Cup.
Yeah, and then didn't play for two games. It's the same with Preston, actually.
Alan Brown.
Alan Brown and Maguire. I don't think Maguire was even in the squad the last championship game.
In fairness, Maguire has been kind of playing every game. I don't know about that one, but he has been. Alan Brown was in and out of the team, and he actually captained Preston in their last game.
Yeah.
But there's actually, I think these two games are inherently linked because of James McLean and Sean Maguire. James McLean has been playing left wing for Ireland for the last 25 years, and his performance has been steadily declining now to the point where he can't be in the Ireland team anymore. Because look, James McLean, we all know what he brings, the passion, and
he did trouble Dallas at the weekend, but the problem he had was a couple of times, like, he tries to go, once he decides I'm getting by this lad, tried to go by him a few times before he actually does anything with the ball.
Stoke have copped onto him in a way that Ireland have yet to, in that he either plays left back or he doesn't play, because he doesn't go by people anymore. And look, James McLean loves playing for Ireland, and he's great passion, but at the end of the day, I'd love to play for Ireland, but I'm no good either. So that's a bit harsh, I know.
Very harsh.
But I just think James McLean, if Ireland are to take on Denmark and Switzerland in these games coming up, they can't have James McLean playing. Like, there maybe was the option to have him playing left back, but now Enda Stevens is on fire at the moment, and he is that position locked up. And that brings me on to Sean Maguire, who has got a couple of opportunities for Ireland, but mostly playing through the middle. And we started against Gibraltar in the first game of this campaign, and he was poor. But from what I've been seeing and from what I've read from people who Preston supporters, media in that area, have been saying, he's much, much better playing off the left. And he's seen his effect at the weekend, winning two penalties coming off the left. So I think that's Sean Maguire's position now, and he should be given the chance to play there against Switzerland, coming off that left flank instead of James McLean.
It is a worry that we are, whatever you say about James McLean, should be playing. At least James McLean is actually getting game time. You're going into this
in and out.
Yeah, but you're going into a very important weekend. We've got another week, obviously, but then after that, you're going into an international break where a lot of our possible starting 11 haven't actually played any football this season yet.
Jeff Hendrick is out of the Burnley team. He's been getting a couple of sub appearances, but he's lost his Brady hasn't played at all. I think he's injured. I'm not sure if he's back fit yet.
But he's at least training, I think. So.
Yeah, but I suppose Sheffield United are the kind of shining light amongst it all, with four Irish lads there.
For how long, though? Because if you look at Ollie McBurney and Billy Sharp came on and completely changed that game against Leicester. I know that's because you've got the excitement of McBurney being a new signing. You've got Billy Sharp being Billy Sharp, and they're just, you know, Sheffield United fans are going to get excited.
I think no matter what, you're going to have one of Robinson or McGoldrick who are going to be starting every game, because I think starts for Billy Sharp are going to be rare, because of how old he is, and it's like a big step up for him. He's never really been playing in the Premier League before. But Enda Stevens looks great, and I know he plays in a slightly different role for Sheffield United than he does for Ireland, but playing left back, he looks fantastic. And we all seen that clip of him doing a lad with a roulette and a pullback there last week.
It's just that's dream to excellence one on one, lads. I know, because I'm from there.
Yeah,
but that's just every day. That's all of us. That was us on the streets. It's everybody.
And John Egan as well. John Egan looks brilliant.
John Egan, Shane Duffy developing into a ball playing centre back.
That's the thing. They're all playing.
Should we just play a team of centre backs?
Yeah. Like, well, Richard Keogh has always fancied himself as a ball playing centre half.
Yep.
Like, never actually has been, but like.
That's a bit harsh, I think.
No, he does like to he does step out and he does play a ball into the midfield. The problem when he does it with Ireland is that no midfielder, save for maybe Conor Hurren now, or Howren, excuse me, we'll do it. Whereas now we've got three lads that would fancy themselves. Well, maybe not Duffy.
I know McCarthy's never going to, said he's never going to play McCarthy and Coleman and Doherty in the same team. But could Coleman maybe slot into the third of a three-man defence and have Doherty and Stevens as the two wing backs? Doherty and Stevens are, like, if you're building a team to suit the best players you have on the team, what they're at, like the two of them, like we're talking about, Matt Doherty mightn't work in a back four. And that's why Coleman gets in ahead of him. But if you are actually legitimately playing,
I picked my Ireland team before the campaign started, and that's the team I picked. I picked five at the back with Coleman playing as the right, kind of the role Kyle Walker played for England in the World Cup last year, where he can step out of the defence, but he's the third centre half. And it's not going to happen now. If it was going to happen, it would have happened at the start of the campaign. And I think that back four is locked down now. No matter what happens, club form, barring injury, we're going to have Coleman, Duffy, and Keogh is the centre-half partnership, and Stevens. And rightly or wrongly, Mike McCarthy's not going to change that now. John Egan maybe is better than Richard Keogh, but Richard Keogh is more experienced and he's going to be playing. So we can get used to it for the rest of this year at least.
Any other Irish players catch your eye this weekend?
Any other Irish players catch my eye? James McCarthy's back playing. It's good sign, because he's a player that we need, because we don't have ball playing midfielders. And you're talking about Richard Keogh coming out and he's known to give it in the Irish midfield. James McCarthy can be that player. Now, it remains to be seen whether he can be at the level that he was before these injury problems, but he was never a player that was dependent on speed or his physicality or anything like that. So I definitely think James McCarthy is one to keep an eye on, and he would be huge if we can get him back playing for Ireland.
I read one article at the weekend that you had up, and apparently James Maddison is 100%, no doubt about it, absolutely, positively going to declare for Ireland.
That was absolutely not the tone of the article, but for anyone...
There's not a hope, really, is there?
No, for anyone who missed it, basically a report in the Irish Independent said that the FAI had approached Leicester City midfielder James Maddison. He's eligible for Ireland through a grandparent. He has yet to play for England senior level, so they're kind of a Hail Mary shot at getting him to come to play for Ireland. It's not going to happen, but it would be bordering on negligence from the FAI not to at least ask. You know, yeah. What do you have to lose?
Exactly. To bring in the old basketball adage, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Shoot your shot.
Yeah.
The worst he can say is no.
Exactly. And people have kind of, it's flared up a bit of anger from some Irish supporters that we're even going from. But I can't really see the point in not trying to get him to play for Ireland. Like, James Maddison's a cracking footballer. And if you were to pick the type of player, what's the one type of player Ireland don't have? It's James Maddison. It's that type of creative midfield force who can get the ball, turn, split defence open with a pass.
Exactly. Like, everybody cites Wes Hoolihan as being like this transcendent player for Ireland. Like, let's call a spade a spade. Wes Hoolihan was a great footballer, but like not actually great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he played a few decent seasons in the Premier League. That was it. Already James Maddison is far beyond what Wes Hoolihan was as a footballer. And that's what we need. So it's foolish to not try.
Yeah.
I know that, like, it just brings it right back to that.
The question is, yeah, exactly. You're taking the place of an Irish, I'm not going to say Irish-born player because that's too reductive. A player who feels distinctly Irish. Now, I don't know, maybe James Maddison does, but he's played for England at underage level. His ties to Ireland, like we're saying, is one grandparent. You would imagine, you know, if the call comes, he was already in an England squad.
He was in an England squad. He hasn't played yet.
Like, now maybe he'll come and say, you know what, I want to play for Ireland more than anything. And you absolutely have to ask that way. But it's more a case of, you see it sometimes where there's players who aren't going to get into an England squad. And they're like, do you know what, I'll chance my arm here and get a bit of international football, which is the thing you're trying to avoid.
Yeah, there's a lot of opinion out there now that from some Irish supporters that they want the FAI to completely abandon this thing of recruiting English-born players to play for Ireland at underage level and even at senior level. I just think I know we've had the Declan Rice thing, we've had the Jack Grealish thing, a couple of other guys as well. I think we can't just abandon it, because some of our best players over the years have been English-born, and a lot of them have dreamed of playing for Ireland. I know I spoke to Gary Breen at a media event a few weeks back, and he was talking about his decision to play for Ireland. Well, it wasn't a decision for him. It was all he ever wanted. And he said that players should want to play for Ireland. We shouldn't be chasing guys that don't. But I think now, with a lot of supporters, they just assume that we're a backup option for everyone, and isn't necessarily the case.
Exactly.
Like, even last week, we put a goal up. Troy Parrott scored a cracker of a goal for the Spurs under 23s, and we put the video up on our social media sites. And the very first comment that came through on the Facebook page was, oh, well, that's him gone to play for England now. It's like, they assumed, first of all, that he was English-born, and that any good player we have is born in England, and secondly, that they'll just go play for England. So, as we all know, Troy Parrott is most certainly not English. But
I think, like, the whole national, your national identity that you feel, or your own personal identity, is like, it's too simplistically looked at as well in terms of football. Like, there is the possibility that there can be a lot of things. You can feel, if you're the case of Declan Rice, whatever, very attached to Ireland, whilst also feeling very English, because you are born and bred in England. Do you know, there are people who will grow up and, do you know, I remember Dermot O'Leary talking about how, like, he's an Irish football supporter. He supports Ireland. He's never supported England. You will always have those feelings. But there are others. I remember Andy Townsend was an example of one where he hadn't really much connection to Ireland in terms of that he wasn't like that. He wasn't so, green blood running through his veins or whatever. But from his experience playing with Ireland, he then felt himself Irish. Now, he seems to carry both. He'll always refer to England as we or whatever if he's on commentary. But there can be that. You can have a balance that, you know, you can feel both at the same time. And it's not as straightforward as, oh, well, I had to grow up in an English household with the fighting leprechaun tattoo on my arm and playing the fiddle.
Of course. And I think the FAI, they do have a duty to seek out these players as well. And of course, if it comes at the expense of neglecting our homegrown talent and ignoring developing our own talent in Ireland, then maybe there's a problem. But if there's definitely a way you can marry the two of them.
Yeah, like you've got now even that it's stretched beyond just being either English-born players that have of Irish descent. It's like you look at Ryan Nolan, who like was born in Ireland but spent most of his life in Spain and Italy. You've got Anselmo Garcia McNulty, who plays for Real Betis, but one of his parents is Irish, you know. And
Johansson.
Ryan Johansson, who's Swedish, Irish, born in Luxembourg, playing in Germany. Like, it's going to be even, like, the world is getting smaller and smaller. So these questions will crop up again and again and again. The only difference is because Ireland have been doing it for years.
Yeah.
It's now, the shoe's going to be on the other foot with regards to lads that are born in Ireland, but say they're of Nigerian descent. Like, it's like the Michael Obafemi thing.
Yeah.
Like, even though he was born in Dublin, he was raised in London to Nigerian parents. Like Chidozie Ogbene, who was born in, I think he was born in Nigeria. If he wasn't born in Nigeria, he was born in Cork, raised in Cork, lived in Cork his whole life. But is sort of on the fence with regards to who he actually would want to play for if, you know, the option was there for him.
Yeah.
So
you can't argue with it, like, if they do decide. Like, we've been, and it is a thing that's always been a bigger issue with Irish players as well, because we've just had such a history of emigration that we're just bound to, with an 80 million diaspora, we're bound to have people, everybody's got some sort of ancestor that's Irish. But anyway,
we'll eat our hats when James Maddison scores the goal that gets us to the Euros.
Oh. I'm quite literally wearing one right now. This will be eaten if Ireland's James Maddison does play for Ireland. For my player rating for the Sheffield United Leicester match, I did mention James Maddison, Ireland's James Maddison. And the playmaker I love so well. Shout out Luke Kelly.
On that note, I think it's time to get on to our Balls Out Football Show quiz. Right, lads. So each week, I'm going to put you two up against each other, or whoever happens to be on the show, in a themed football quiz. Mm. Each week's going to have a different theme. This weekend's quiz, given that the transfer window is about to close across Europe, it's already closed, obviously, ahead of the Premier League season. It's the Who Costs More quiz.
Ooh, right.
Now, Sean, as you're wearing a cap, you get to go first.
Oh, thank you so much.
That's great logic.
First choice. Well, Lou, you spoke. Look, the way this is going to be is I'm going to tell you two players who transferred to a club in the same season. Okay. And you're both going to have to tell me who was worth more. So you can give the same answer, Gary, as Sean, if you want. But just going to, you know, in case you want to have a little extra time. Maybe you actually are better off going second because you get extra time to think. So the first one off is the 2002-2003 season.
Okay.
Hot off the back of the 2002 World Cup, Sean. Brazil had a great World Cup. Senegal also had a great World Cup. Gilberto Silva joined Arsenal in the summer of 2002. El Hadji Diouf joined Liverpool from Lens. Who cost more?
Gonna go with El Hadji Diouf.
Yeah, El Hadji Diouf was Liverpool's record signing, so I think it would be him.
Gilberto Silva was described after the World Cup by Veja magazine after what he did for Brazil, when he kind of was a surprise person to get into that World Cup squad. They said that he carried the piano for Ronaldo and Rivaldo to play their tunes on throughout that World Cup, which was
poetic.
A brilliant line that I read today.
It's much better than, was it Zidane calling Deschamps the water carrier?
Much, exactly. It's a much more elegant way to put it.
Unfortunately for Gilberto Silva, it didn't have such resonance when it came to the money that the Arsenal paid for him. He only cost 4.5 million, and Hadji Diouf cost 10 million. So you both get a point apiece with that one.
Well, like,
The signing didn't work out for Liverpool, and it did work out for Arsenal. So
I've got Diouf. If this ends in a draw, we're going to come back to an El Hadji Diouf tiebreaker. So more on him later on, possibly. 2003-2004 season, Cristiano Ronaldo joined Manchester United. Damien Duff joined Chelsea. Gary, who cost more?
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo says Gary. Sean?
Damien Duff, 17 million. I remember it like it was yesterday.
I knew Ronaldo cost like 12 and a half. I just wasn't sure what Duff cost.
Ronaldo cost 12. Damien Duff
me as a me in what when I was 7 years of age, an Irish lad signing for Chelsea, the team I supported that never had never had Irish players, and I was delighted.
Yeah.
2005-2006, Sean Wright Phillips joined Chelsea. Nemanja Vidic joined Manchester United from Spartak Moscow. Sean, who was more expensive?
Foolishly, Sean Wright Phillips cost about like 24 million or something, didn't he?
You're giving a lot away here if that's right, Gary.
Yeah, it is Sean Wright Phillips. I knew that.
You can't forget Sean Wright Phillips costing.
Sean Wright Phillips, 21 million. Nemanja Vidic, 7 million. Gary. 2007-2008 season. Nicholas Anelka joined Chelsea from Bolton Wanderers. Darren Bent joined Tottenham Hotspur from Charlton Athletic.
Okay.
Who cost the most?
I'm going to say Darren Bent.
Sean?
I'm going to go Darren Bent as well.
I think he was Darren Bent was 16 and Anelka was 15.
Anelka was definitely 15 anyway, yeah.
These are very good at this game. Nicholas Anelka cost 15 million. Darren Bent cost 16.5 million.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about that Anelka transfer fee. It's just because he's one of those like Robbie Keane esque players that you kind of go, well, in his career he went for 100 and million. Like whatever.
2012-2013 season, Sean. Robin van Persie joined Manchester United. Eden Hazard joined Chelsea. Who cost more?
Hazard,
yeah, 30 million.
32 million for Hazard, 22.5 million from van Persie, but I think it ended up in 24 because they had a clause which was an extra million and a half if United won the Premier League. So there you go, lads. We're down to the last question. And Sean, you lead 5 points to four. You've gotten every one of them right so far. Yeah. But
that damn Damien Duff question.
There is so much to play for here with the last question because there are 4 points on offer in the last one.
I love it.
This is... Right, and Sean, you get to go first because you're in the lead, though.
Okay.
I've got four players here who... Irish players who moved in the 2009-2010 season. You have to put them in order from who cost the most down to who cost the least. Okay, you can both do it. Both go together, right? So we'll write them down.
We'll hide our hands.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you've got Kevin Doyle going to Wolves. You've got Richard Dunne joining Aston Villa. You've got Damien Duff joining Fulham. And you've got Stephen Hunt going to Hull City.
Ooh. Right.
All these transfer fees, might I add, as the lads put them in order, are taken from Wikipedia. It's the most reliable source I could find, funnily enough, because transfermarket.com is great, but they adjust them for inflation, and therefore you'd all be given out to me, listeners, saying,
It wasn't that.
Cristiano Ronaldo didn't cost 18 million for Manchester United. It was actually 12. Yeah, we know that, but it's inflation. But anyway... How are you getting on there, lads?
So it was Duff going from Newcastle to Fulham.
Newcastle to Fulham. Stephen Hunt going from Reading to Hull City. Richard Dunne going from Man City to Aston Villa. And Kevin Doyle going from Reading to Wolves.
Okay, I'm going first, am I?
It doesn't make a difference, but you can call them out first.
From highest to lowest.
So at the top, I'm going Kevin Doyle.
You're going with Doyle.
Second, I'm going Richard Dunne.
Dunne.
Third, Stephen Hunt.
Stephen Hunt.
And fourth, Damien Duff.
Gary.
Well, I have very similar answers, but I have Doyle as the most expensive, followed by Richard Dunne, followed by Damien Duff, and then Stephen Hunt.
Well.
Because we've got them all wrong.
Going into the last round, as we said, Sean, you are 1 point behind. I'm ahead. Oh, sorry, 1 point ahead, I should say. But interestingly, with this game, If one of them got one more right than the other in the four rankings, it means you automatically get two right because there are different things. Mm-hmm. So I can inform you that Kevin Doyle did indeed cost the most. He was 6.5 million. Richard Dunne did indeed cost the second most. He was 5 million.
This is brilliant.
So it all comes down to who was more expensive, Damien Duff or Stephen Hunt. Damien Duff signed for Fulham for £4 million. Stephen Hunt joined Hull City for £3.5 million. Gary Connaughton takes it home, steals it at the finish. Oh, and Sean's got his cap in his hands.
What a way to finish off the first podcast.
What a way. Dramatic finish here. Look, you could play. We'll add a few more into that, and we'll maybe put that quiz up on site. It's a bit of crack. Check that out throughout the week. Also, if you have not already, as I mentioned, be sure to subscribe to the podcast by searching balls.ie podcast on all good apps, or indeed football on balls.ie. When you subscribe, it'll be a big help to us, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, to rate and review the show if you can. Leave a review, whether you like it, love it, or only kind of like it. Just tell us you love it anyway. You can get us on all our social media channels throughout the week at BallsDOTIE. We'll also be back on Wednesday for the Build Up podcast with Ladbrokes, where we'll be looking ahead to the sporting weekend. But until we chat to you again, mind yourself.